My name's Sophie, I'm an addict.
Hi, Sophie.
I'm really happy to be here, but I'm also very anxious, so just kind of bear with me a bit. But, you know, my experience tells me that as I start talking and get further on, my anxiety will probably lift, and I'm just hoping that's going to happen. And, you know, I've thought a lot about doing this share and about what I'm going to say, and I'm still none the wiser, really, so I'm just going to sort of share what I share. And you know, one thing that I do know is all I can do is just do my best and be myself, really. And, you know, I said a little prayer in the toilets before I come in here and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, but, you know, I'm very happy to be here. I'm very happy to be in recovery and in a 12-step program, and I'm very happy to be clean. You know, I suppose I can just tell my story. You know, I used for a long time. For me, I suppose it was quite kind of a natural progression. I started sort of puffing and drinking in my early teens, and by the time I was like 17, 18, I was using Class A drugs. And even though I've been in recovery for quite some time now, I'm still not really sure of why I started using. I know lots of people sort of have sort of a theory of why they started using and that, and I don't really. You know, I know that I liked using. When I first started using, I really liked it. I liked using drugs. I liked the feelings that it gave me. And, you know, I didn't have to take responsibility. You know, I come from quite a nice family. I think I come from a nice family. My mum's a little bit off-key, and I suppose I'm a little bit off-key. But, you know... And so I can't, you know, and I'm not into sort of like, I come from a really dysfunctional family and all that. I can't really say that, you know, because my dad's quite, you know, he's quite an honourable man, and, you know, he's one of the best people that I know, really. But, you know, I think I just started using because I liked it. I was in that kind of crowd of people. You know, I was always quite shy when I was a child, and by using drugs, it enabled me to not feel so shy. It enabled me to communicate and all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, by the time I was 17, I was using quite hard drugs, and I just continued to do that. You know, and most days I used every day, and I never ever thought that I was an addict. You know, I had a cousin who was an addict, and I could clearly see in her that she was definitely an addict and she definitely had problems and she needed help. But I couldn't see that in me. For me, I thought, oh no, I'm different. You know, I always sort of, you know, in my head, I thought that I'd sort of could manage my life quite well. I always had a flat, I always had a car, and my dad helped me quite a lot. My dad enabled my using quite a lot in that kind of sense, you know. He'd always pay for me if I ran out of money and stuff like that. And my life continued like that, really, and I quite liked it. You know, I liked that lifestyle that I had for quite a long time. And, you know, I suppose when I hit about 25, my life did kind of start to get quite unmanageable. And I fell pregnant and I had a child. And in my head, I remember thinking that, you know, this child, if I had this child, everything would be okay. The problems that I was experiencing would disappear. I wouldn't use drugs anymore and all that kind of stuff. And that didn't happen. My baby's father went to prison when he was about 8 months old. And I continued to use. And I found that really difficult. You know, I had this young baby. I was using by this time. I was using quite chaotically, and it was difficult. You know, but one thing I did know for all of that was I loved my child, and I would have done anything for my child. And I always kind of said to myself, you know, if I ever lose the child, I'll stop using. And the reality was that I didn't. You know, I knew sort of coming up to losing my child, that, you know, he got taken into care, and then my mum came in and went to court and got custody of him. But, you know, up to the runnings up, I knew that I was going to use him, and I knew that, you know, they gave me a few chances. I could go into detox, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I went into detox. I lasted about 5 days and I left. You know, I didn't want to be clean. You know, I couldn't get clean for my mum and dad. I couldn't get clean for my child. I just couldn't do it. And, you know, when it came to it, and there was all the child protection meetings and the big court case, I didn't even turn up. You know, by that time, I was really caught up in the grips of the illness. And you know, when I first came to a meeting, there was a reading, and it said, you know, we live to use and use to live, and that was the first sort of phrase that sort of captured me when I came to NA, because I thought that was my life, that was all I did. I didn't do anything else. By the end of my using, you know, that's what I did. And you know, as soon as I lost my baby, he was about, I think probably coming up to two then, my life kind of quickly spiraled out of control. And I think by that point, I kind of got past caring, and, you know, I lost my flat, I didn't have anywhere to live. And I used to stay in different places, really. You know, if I had the money, I'd stay in a B&B. And it's really funny, one of the places that I stayed at, I used to stay at a friend's house, and he's actually sitting in this room tonight, and it's really weird that we're both now in recovery, you know. And, you know, and I just carried on using, and that was all I did. And I'd remember, like, when I was going out, and I'd come up the West End, and I'd make a bit of money and that, and I'd look at the people, the girls in the pubs and clubs and that, and they'd be out after work having a drink with their friends, having a really good time, and I wanted to be one of them girls. That's what I wanted to be like. You know, I didn't want to be how I was, but I just didn't know how to stop. And I couldn't really see past a day clean. You know, I'd look at people and I'd think, you know, how do they do it? How do they get through a day without taking drugs? Because I couldn't do that. That just was totally alien to me. My only coping mechanism was to take drugs. And you know, it's really funny, when I had my baby, there was a girl that lived upstairs from me, and she was really nice, and she was really homely, and she was really motherly, and she had a baby at the same time. And whenever I felt a little bit down, I'd go up to her flat, and she'd make me a cup of tea, and she'd go, "Don't worry, darling, sit down, have a cup of tea, it'll be all right." And she'd give me these biscuits, and she'd bake them, and she'd put them in a biscuit tin with a bit of, like, kitchen roll or whatever, and they'd always look really pretty, and I'd always think, that's what I want to be like. You know, I want to be that kind of person that sits at home baking biscuits and puts them in a really nice tin for when my mates come round. And today I can do that. It's amazing, and I've done that. You know, one of the first things I did when I got my flat was I bought a biscuit tin, put some kitchen roll in it, and put some biscuits. I didn't bake them, but, you know. I bought them from, you know, Sainsbury's or something. And, yeah, so... You know, I always had this a picture of how I'd quite like my life to be, and it was always very simple things. It was nothing elaborate. It was very simple things, and the most thing I wanted was to get a day clean. And how I actually came into recovery was, you know, I'd done quite a lot of detoxes before. And I remember, you know, one day I woke up, and I was in the Old Kent Road, and I came out of this flat, and, you know, and I was rattling a little bit, and thinking, you know, I've got to go and get a bit of money now. I had no money, and I went into a petrol station. I was hungry. I had no food. I had no money. I had nothing, and I went into a petrol station, and I nicked a few sweets because I was hungry, and the guy must have seen me, and I had to put one Mars bar up my arm. And I had all these other sweets, and he must have seen me. He said, "Empty your pockets, you're not leaving till you give these sweets back." So I thought, "Oh, you can have them, I've got the Mars bar." And as I've walked out to go out the door, the Mars bar slipped down the sleeve of my jacket, and he saw it, and he closed the glass door on me and said, "You're not going till you give that Mars bar back." And I remember I begged him for that Mars bar. I was so hungry. I just thought, "Please, just let me have the Mars bar so I can get on the bus and go up the West End." And, he didn't give me the Mars bar, so I left. And I remember sitting on a wall, kind of waiting to jump on a bus, or I was walking up to the tube station to jump a tube or something, and I just burst into tears. You know, and quite often I didn't cry when I was using. You know, I kept it all quite tightly inside. You know, and I just cried my eyes out, and I thought, how did my life get like this? It wasn't meant to be like this. And I thought of, you know, my family, I thought of my son, and, you know, I thought of a lot of stuff. And I kind of thought, you know, maybe I do need to go to rehab. Because before, when people have said to me, go to rehab, that I've left detox, I might be sort of a week clean or something. And I think, they're mad, didn't they? I'm clean. Like, I didn't sort of have the comprehension of what it was, or... You know, I had no sort of comprehension of recovery. You know, I'd been to a few meetings in detoxes and stuff, but, you know. And so I went to this place and I asked him to refer me back to the same detox and stuff. I'd only been in there like 3 months before and got chucked out. And so I was feeling a little bit shameful, but I thought, this is what I need to do. But, you know, I always, you know, I was very dishonest in my using. Very dishonest. I'd lie about anything and everything. And, you know, and I used to make up stupid lies as well just to make my life sound better and really silly things. But, you know, and I wasn't completely honest because, you know, I'd been, you know, by this time I was getting arrested more frequently and, you know, and I'd been arrested and I'd gone not guilty and I was going to go up into Crown Court. And I thought, I'm definitely going to get a sentence. There was no doubt about it. Even the judge said, you know, you're going to look at a custodial sentence. And I kind of thought, oh, you know, let me go. You know, one, I don't want to be using anymore. Two, I don't really want to go to prison. And, you know, let me try and go to detox. So I went to this detox. Whilst I was in the detox, I went back to court and went guilty. And they gave me a deferred sentence to see how I went in, how treatment was for me. And this time I stayed in the detox. I put my head down. At night time, you know, it was the sort of place everyone would go downstairs at night time because no one could sleep and muck about. And I just thought, you know, this time I didn't do that. You know, even though I couldn't sleep, I'd just lay in my bed from like 11 o'clock till 7 o'clock in the morning till I could get my next bit of medicine and that, methadone or whatever they gave you. And I've just got to get through this. And if to me then it was quite hard because it was quite streety in there and you can easily get caught up in things and collude with people and stuff like that. And I found that difficult, even though it was like 3 weeks, I found it difficult to really keep my head down and stuff because I was used to just kind of, you know, just acting out all over the place and colluding with people. And I did, and I went to rehab. And it was quite... I remember when they were showing me the rehabs to go to, they were saying you can go to a 12-step, you can go to therapeutic, and someone said to me, oh, so if you don't want to go to a 12-step, you have to do loads of writing. Go to a therapeutic, you ain't got to do no writing. So I thought, oh, easy way out, I'll go therapeutic. And I said, I'm not going for 6 months. And when I looked at the sheet that said about this rehab, I thought it said 6 weeks. I honestly thought it said 6 weeks. And when I went in there and they said, oh, hi, you're here for 6 months, blah, 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 I was like, what? I can't stay here for six months? You know, I thought it was 6 weeks. And, you know, in my head, I honestly thought I couldn't be there for 6 months. It was too long. But where I thought I was going to go, I don't know. I had nowhere to go. I didn't have a flat. I couldn't go back to my family. I hadn't seen them for ages. You know, it was all that kind of stuff. And I stayed there. And I actually quite liked it. It was, you know, I had a bed there. The people were quite nice. They talked to me and they listened. And I felt like it was the first time that anyone has kind of heard me for years. And I felt safe. And that was a big factor for me for staying in this rehab, was the fact that I felt safe. And I remember I felt a lot of feelings. I didn't really feel no feelings when I was in the detox. When I got to that rehab and I laid on my bed, I felt like I wanted to die. All these feelings came flooding back and I felt so much shame and guilt. I felt so much shame and guilt around what I'd done to my family and around what I'd done to my son. And the shame and guilt that what I'd put my son through and, you know, not even fighting for him and stuff like that, I really found that difficult to live with. And I kind of, the place that I was in at that time, I felt like I couldn't live with it. I felt like them feelings were going to kill me. Now, I now know through being in recovery and doing a 12-step program that feelings don't kill you, but the drugs do. But at that time, it really felt like the feelings were going to kill me. And, you know, slowly but surely, I kind of started to work through that stuff. And it was a very painful experience for me. And you know, even the whole 6 months that I was there, I still think I only just barely touched on things, really. I didn't kind of go that deep. And I wasn't really pushed to go that deep either. And it's funny, you know, that the rehab that I was in, they were very much against doing meetings. They were very much against 12-step program. And they, instead of encouraging me to go to meetings, they kind of discouraged me quite a lot. Even though when the last month that I was there, I went to a couple of meetings. They kind of discouraged me. And now when I reflect and I look back on that, I think that's really weird. And, you know, that the rehab that I was in, it shut down about 4 years ago. It's not there anymore. It's now supported housing. And maybe that's a good thing because, you know, even though it helped me quite a lot, I'm not sure about discouraging people to do a 12-step program. But it did save my life going there. And by the time I'd finished that program, I wanted to go into supported housing. I wanted to do a second stage. And that's what I did. But, you know, because I didn't have a 12-step program really, when I went to the second stage, you know, some people did meetings and some people didn't. And I started to go and I found it very daunting. But the one thing I knew that when I went to my first meeting, I heard a girl do a chair and her story was very, very similar to mine. And she was sharing about, you know, she came into recovery and she didn't have any friends and she used to go back to the places that she used to use and stuff because she knew them as her friends. And it was a very similar thing to what I was doing. Because I think my self-esteem was so low, I didn't really think I was worthy of talking to anyone in recovery. I didn't go for coffee. As soon as I sat down, I was gripped to my seat and I couldn't go to the toilet. I couldn't make a cup of tea because I thought if I got up and walked anywhere, everyone would look at me and I couldn't bear it. And, I now know that that's not true. It's not all about me. But in them days, it was, you know. And it was a very scary experience. And I kept going back to the place that I used to use or associating with people that I used with. And eventually I used. And I must have been about 9 months clean then. And I used and I used again. And the thing was, when I used, the reason why I used again a few weeks after, because I didn't tell anyone. Because all those feelings of shame and guilt came back on me and I didn't tell anyone. And then I used again. And then I remember the last time I used, it was quite a bad experience that I had when I was using. And I was back in the area that I used to live with the people that I was using with. And I had quite a bad experience. And I got into this car to go and get some more drugs. And they put the music on. And when I was using, I didn't really listen to music. I didn't watch telly. You know, most of the time I had nowhere to live. So I didn't have a telly and I didn't have no CDs. I didn't, you know. But when I got into rehab, I started listening to music. And they put this CD on and this music started playing. And it just kind of, I don't know, something happened. And I just thought, it brought all back to me what I could lose, you know. By this time, I'd kind of had a few contacts with my son. My family still didn't really want to know me, but I'd managed to have like 2 supervised visits with my son. And I thought to myself, this is what I'm going to lose. And I made them stop the car and I got out of the car and I went back to the rehab. And I did 90 meetings in 90 days. And that really helped me, doing those 90 meetings in 90 days. And I got a sponsor, a girl that I kind of knew and I kind of trusted. And I worked steps 1, 2, and 3 with her. And when I told her that I'd been using and that I hadn't told anyone, and I was supposed to be coming up to a year clean, and people going to me, "You're going to get your key ring, Sophie?" And I was like, "Oh my God." And she said to me, look, if you keep it a secret anymore, I mean, I know you've told me and you know yourself, but you will use again. So I went back to the place where I was and I went up to the staff room and I told them that I'd used and that I'd kept it a secret, and it, you know, for about 3 months now. And they asked me why I was telling them, and I said, because if I don't tell you, I'll use again and I need to work through it. And they allowed me to stay there and work through it, and I got support from the house that I was in. And I went into meetings and owned that I'd been using, and I got support with it. And that was kind of a real breakthrough for me, just to be able to be that honest, you know, because my whole life I've been so dishonest. To own something like that was massive for me. You know, in an early recovery, you know, I suppose because I didn't trust myself that much, I found it very difficult to trust other people. And I worked this step 1, 2, and 3 with this sponsor, and it really, really helped me. And I found what I didn't have all them years was I didn't have much faith, I didn't have much hope, and I didn't have any acceptance over around myself. And therefore, I couldn't accept people in the meetings. I couldn't, you know, I just couldn't accept anything, really. And I was very, very angry. And by working this, you know, the first 3 steps, it kind of gave me a bit of foundation. But because I am me, you know, when I was using, I did it my way. So when I came into recovery, I thought, oh, I can do it my way. You know, it goes against my grain to take all them suggestions on and you know, you've got to do this and you should do that and da-da-da-da. I thought, you know, they're all really good suggestions, but, you know, I'll take a few of them on and, you know, the rest I'll leave. And that's what I did. I continued going to meetings. And I had this step 1, 2, and 3, and I thought, I don't need to do step 4. And you know, I justified it every which way. I thought, you know, I've been in rehab for, like, you know, I've done that first stage. I was in the second stage for 2.5 years. I thought I'd done a lot of work on myself, and I don't need to do it. And so I didn't do it. And you know, I carried on with my life, and you know, my life did get better. I've always continued to go into meetings, even at time when I've kind of gone through the door kicking and screaming in my head, thinking, you know, why am I coming here? Quite resentful. And I know now when I look back, that was because I wasn't willing to work the steps and stuff. And I was resentful of the other people because they were doing it and I wasn't. But what I started to get, you know, as I carried on through recovery with some acceptance. And, you know, acceptance to me is quite important, and having that faith in a higher power is very important to me. And my experience of that is, you know, a lot of things that I want sometimes don't sort of happen in my time, they happen in God's time. And, you know, when I was waiting in this place to get a flat, I waited a long time, and, you know, I had to share a room for all that time, and, you know, people come in and out and stuff. And but I always kept myself quite busy. I'm always one of those people in my using. I was very motivated in getting up and going and getting the money and getting my drugs. And in my recovery, I've been quite motivated in moving myself forward into areas that I want to do. I was motivated to go to meetings. I just wasn't motivated to work the steps, really. So when I kind of sat and waited for my flat, and that sort of taught me quite a lot about having a lot of patience and stuff. And when my offer came through and I went to see it, I went to see this 24-storey tower block and this flat on the 18th floor, and I just looked at it and burst into tears and thought, oh my God, I'm not going to live here. And I went back and I was just really, really angry. And you know, I phoned up people in recovery, I phoned up friends, we went round to look at it again, we looked at the positive things of it and not the negative things of it, and I got acceptance around it. And I thought, okay, this is my flat, I'm going to move in there and I'm going to make the best of it. The next day, the guy who ran the place came to see me and he said, do you know what, you've you've got another offer for a flat. A flat's come through from a housing association. It's in Pimlico. It's in sort of a basement flat. It was lovely. Well, do you want it? And I thought, oh, my God, that's really weird. You know, as soon as I've got acceptance around something, what I really wanted came along. And that's been my experience in going for a job as well, you know. I went for this job once and I really, really wanted it, except it was quite far from my house and stuff like that, and I didn't get the job. I went for another interview and I didn't get the job. And a week later, one of the guy on who'd been on the panel for the interview phoned me up and said, you did so well on the interview, I've got a job going for you in my project. Do you want it? You can start on Monday. And it was the best, possibly the best outcome out of all those jobs that, you know, could possibly happen to me. And, you know, my faith never falters, because I always think if something doesn't go my way, if something doesn't happen that, you know, I really want something and it doesn't happen, all that means is that, you know, my higher power or God, I believe that it's God, my higher power is God, but for other people I know that it's different things, that, you know, God's just got better things in store for me, and I truly believe that, and my faith is really strong around that. So, you know, someone once said to me as well, you know, Sophie, if you keep your side of the street clean, you will be okay. And I truly believe that as well, because I know if I do anything a little bit dishonest, I'm not okay. You know, but as long as I keep, sometimes I think, you know, other people might be doing things around me that I don't particularly like. But as long as what I'm doing is honest and what I'm doing, you know, I'm in every area of my life, I'm keeping it clean and stuff, then I'm going to be okay. And that's been my experience. It doesn't matter what other people do, as long as I'm honest and my recovery is good, and, you know, then I'm okay, and I can kind of, you know, overcome a lot of stuff. And I've kind of gone out off on a tangent. I completely forgotten what I was talking about. But, you know, I just run it through a little bit. So, you know, by this time, you know, I'm getting quite a lot of acceptance, and I had a strong faith. But I kind of went into my flat. My sponsor had her own problems and couldn't sponsor me anymore. And I kind of thought, that's okay too, because maybe I don't need a sponsor. You know, so I'm mulling about in my flat for another couple of years, you know, just, you know. And I kind of hit a little bit of a rock bottom in recovery. And what I remember from it, what I remember is I was going into meetings and I was hearing people share. And every time I heard a share, I was thinking, right, I'm doing it wrong, I should be doing it this way. Or, no, I'm not doing it, I'm not doing that, I should be doing that. And then I was hearing people share about the steps, and I was getting really resentful, because I was thinking, I haven't got that experience, and, you know, I was feeling angry and I was feeling resentful. And by this time, let me just roll back a little bit, I'd asked another lady to be my sponsor, and I'd worked step three with her, and she'd given me my step four, and I did have all the good intentions of doing the step four. But because I think I wasn't sure if I wanted to read it out to anyone, you know, even though I really liked my sponsor, I wasn't sure if I trusted her enough to read it out and stuff like that. And so I did my own kind of process. You know, one day I just thought, you know, I went into a meeting feeling angry and resentful, and I thought, you know, something's got to change, and that something's got to be me. It's, you know, I'm not angry and resentful at anyone in the meeting. I know that. I'm angry and resentful with myself and you know, maybe not applying my recovery. And I had a lot of anger inside about other things as well. And I made a decision that I was going to write my step four. And I wrote my step four. And when I'd written it, my sponsor texted me something out of the blue. And I hadn't spoken to her for ages and ages and ages. And I phoned her up, I didn't text her back, I phoned her up, and while we were speaking, I told her I've done my step four, and you know, and she said, fine, let's do a step five. And I remember feeling really, really nervous, thinking, like, you know, either this is it or my whole world's going to crumble when I do this step five. But as I'd written my step four, it hadn't been that bad, you know. It as I was writing it, I didn't feel as bad as I thought I was going to. I didn't feel as fearful as I thought I was going to. You know, they say it's a fearless and moral inventory, and that's what it was. So all that myth that I had was totally unfounded. And when I read it out to my sponsor, it was one of the, I think it was one of the real turning points in my recovery. I felt that I really trusted this woman. She didn't judge me. It wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. And I thought, do you know what? I'm not that bad. Really, I'm not that bad. And it just enabled me to carry on and really want to work the other steps. And it showed me why the steps are in that order. And it was a real turning point in my recovery. And, you know, I'm really glad that, you know, maybe it had to take me to get to that place. But, you know, I got to that place and I turned it around. And, you know, today when I sit here, you know, I've done a lot of stuff. You know, I've done a lot of stuff in recovery now. You know, I work. I've got quite a good job. I've been promoted in that job once already. You know, I stopped. I came off benefits when I started that job. And you know, that was a real big thing for me, to let go of that dependence. You know, I've always been dependent on something. You know, the drugs, another person. You know, my benefits, whatever, and, you know, to let go of that, that was quite a big thing. But the most thing I think I've got out of recovery is that by working a 12-step program and having faith in a higher power and myself, is that I've got quite good acceptance of myself today. And therefore, I'm able to accept other people. And I feel okay about myself. And that's massive for me. Really, really, really big. Because I never kind of felt okay about myself. Especially when I was using. Especially what I did to my son. And to share something about my son, you know. My main goal when I came into recovery was to get my son back. To get custody of my son back. And that didn't happen. You know, it started off very slowly. And I had to supervise visits. And eventually I went back to court and I didn't get custody. I appealed it, I didn't get custody. But today I have him every weekend. And in a couple of years when he goes to secondary school, he's 10 now, he just turned 10. In a couple of years when he goes to secondary school, I'm hoping to have him in the week. And that would be an agreement between my mum and social services and everything. And it's all happened very slowly. But the way it's happened it's been better than I ever imagined, really. I know I haven't got full custody of him back, and I didn't get it when I wanted it, but I think eventually, you know, I might get it. But if I don't, it's okay. The most thing that's really important to me is we have a really good bond now, and I always put my recovery and my son first. They come before anything. And, you know, he's like my best mate. And he's really nice. And he knows about meetings. He knows about my recovery. Sometimes quite a lot of people in this room have met my son, and he comes to meetings. And he's a really, really lovely boy. And you know, I'm really grateful that he's in my life. And, you know, I don't really know what to say. But if there's any newcomers around, you know, just keep coming back, because that's all I did. I kept coming back, and eventually, you know, in my own time and probably in God's time, I grasped the 12-step program, and my life's beyond my wildest dreams, really. You know, not in monetary terms, just in terms of how I feel about myself, having my family back in my life, having my son back in my life, and knowing today that I've got friends, because that was one thing I didn't have. I didn't have any friends, and today I have, and I've got the ability to ask for help when I'm struggling, and that's a massive gift as well. So, you know, I'm really happy to be here, and I hope someone got something from it. Thanks.